This is Interface, Roosevelt University's program of discussion and comment. I'm Arnie Reichler.
And I'm Brad Hunt.
And we're joined by two very special guests. Our first guest is famous at Roosevelt for being the director of distance learning, but that's not why she's here. Her name is Kristen Broadwell, and she is an actor, a film actor. And our other guest is the producer and director of a number of well-known films in the Chicago area, Robert Alanez, who is producer of the film that Kristen's going to be in. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is that Dinks?
It's Dinks. Double income, no kids.
Okay. Before we get into the acting, why don't you tell us a little bit about that film?
Well,
I assume it's a comedy?
It is a comedy. It's kind of a dark comedy. It's a story about a couple who, in their 30s, who have decided that they do not want children, and ever, never want to have children. And they buy their dream home in this town called Legacy, Illinois, which is a fictional town created for the movie. And in this town, it is saturated with family values, children, parents, a Dink's nightmare. And they really don't realize how bad it is until after they move in and they start taking a lot of abuse by parents and everything, and even some form of discrimination, which is actually what the movie's kind of about. It's about discrimination against those people who decide they want to live that lifestyle of not having children ever. And that's kind of what it's about.
And your role in the film is what, Kristen?
I play a news anchor, Nancy Roberts. And it's a small part, but it's an important part because it's the part I interview the main character and talk to him about why he wants to be a dink and how it is in society and things like that. So,
and it's interesting in terms of your own background, going from being the technology guru of the university to doing, what got you interested in doing films?
Well, I started off, I just took a commercial class a couple of years ago just for fun. I've always wanted to do acting when I was younger. When I was little, we would, write our own little plays. And I used to watch the Mickey Mouse Club, and we would write out little skits to do with the neighborhood. And I've always been interested in it. And then when I moved to Chicago a couple of years ago, I took a commercial class, and I fell in love with it. And then I just started taking acting classes, and I got into the independent films, and it's been a lot of fun. I've had a film that's went to Cannes Film Festival this year called The Sicilian Odyssey.
And will it be playing in Chicago anytime soon?
They've had a couple of screenings. I think it may screen again. I'm not sure. I know that you can buy it on DVD now, I believe. but I've just done a lot of independent films, and I was honored to be a part of Dinks and play, the news anchor. It's been a lot of fun and met a lot of people, and it's great to work with a up-and-coming director. So,
okay, let's ask about the up-and-coming director.
Okay.
tell us about being an up-and-coming director in the independent film world.
It's a long way to come up. The little bit of the history of it was I'm in my 50s, and I started making films when I was in college. And so I went through that cycle where a lot of young filmmakers are now, probably at Columbia College and everything, wanting to do movies and learning about screenwriting and directing and things like that. And I think I actually fell into directing only because of the fact that I couldn't find somebody to direct my scripts that I wrote, because I'm basically a writer first, and that's kind of what I started doing first, and some acting as well. So I have some theater background. And I got into film about the same time as Sam Raimi was making Evil Dead in a forest. I was in another forest making one of my movies, except he had more money than me. I had less. So his movie became famous. Mine kind of went down the toilet. But I used several years I worked at making films, and life kind of got in the way. I wasn't having very much luck with it. I didn't come from a very rich family, so I wasn't able to go to the better schools and things like that. But I just had this passion and love for filmmaking. So around, I think when I was about 49 or 48, my wife, who was one of the most wonderful people in the world, said to me, if this is what you really want to do, why don't you do it? And I said, well, it's kind of late now, isn't it? And she's like, no, it's never late. Just do it. So I had an idea for a script called Timepiece, and about a man who turns 40 and looking back at his life, looking at the things he could have changed. And so it's kind of this time travel type movie that's a little bit along the same lines as Inception by Christopher Nolan, which just came out recently. Not as good as that, of course, but along those lines. And then it just kind of took off from there. I did Time Server. It was successful to the fact that to the point we made the money back. So I went and did Barrymore's Dream, which was an old script I'd written when I was younger. That one did not do well. However, it won an award. So I don't know how that worked out. I was very surprised to find out that it won when we entered it in the Route 66 Film Festival in Springfield. And from there, it just kind of kept going. I did a movie called Bitter Blue, which was a family film. It was a kid's movie. And that did very well. We made all our money back and then more. Someone saw that and said, hey, you know, what do you got up your sleeve? You know, I got some money and what do you want to do? And so I thought, okay, well, maybe we can keep this thing going.
Well,
and that's what happened.
Let's ask a little bit about, first of all, when people think of films, they think of filmmakers eventually going to one coast or the other, especially the West Coast. How difficult is it to be an independent filmmaker in an area which tends to import films from other, you know, when you see films on the street, it's usually somebody from California coming here. How difficult is it, A, to get funding and get recognition when you're in the heartland?
Well, I think funding is not that much of the problem. I mean, if you find the right people that believe in what you do or like the script that you write, or in my case, I've gotten some notoriety because of some TV appearances and stuff, I have been able to get funding, which is how Dinks was made, because my last film, The Vision, even though it played at the Music Box, did not do very well. But I had two people see it and said, wow, this is really good. What do you got up your sleeve? And I went into the next one. I know it's hard in Chicago. Chicago is, it's tough. I know Hollywood comes here and they film everything here, and it's great to see Transformers or whatever movies are being made here, you know, but to break in the industry from here is tough. I mean, my theory is you have to make something that stands out. You got to get, you know, something that will get word of mouth and everybody goes, yeah, this is this great movie. And like Dinks, for example, boy, that's a really funny movie. Yeah, it's some guy in Chicago that made it. And then hopefully somebody who has the right connection on the coast will, you know, maybe contact you or whatever, that type of thing.
What's the challenge to go from being a writer where you've written a script to now directing, to being a director, making that leap from writer to director? What's been the biggest challenge as a director?
The biggest challenge is to, you know, when you visualize something in the script, first of all, as a director, you have to, if you're going to be directing what you write, you have to be aware of the fact that you are going to have limitations based on your budget and based on location and things like that. I could never write the next Star Wars movie because I don't have the money for that. So I have to scale it down. So my scripts are usually written about kind of like everyday people, ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances. And that's how I write. I write it like that. Then directing it, the hardest part is finding the people to play the characters that you've created and make it believable. And then, of course, make your story believable within the context and the confines of your environment and the place that you're going to be filming and with the budget that you have. So I think that's the hardest part.
And what about in terms of the acting part in this? We talked a little bit before about how you became an actress, but how serious is it when you have a full-time job with a lot of responsibility?
Quit your job to be on
right.
Dinks.
Right. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it is a challenge, but it's, you know, you look at it, you know, it's something that I enjoy doing, just like some people enjoy, like my boyfriend enjoys playing golf. He will play golf every single night of the week if he could. It's the same type of thing. It's just something I really enjoy, and it doesn't feel like work after work, you know? I mean, I can really focus at work, but then when I get home, I can, you know, study a script, rehearse. It doesn't feel like work. It doesn't exhaust me because it doesn't.
It's fun.
It's fun.
Is it fun to make a movie?
It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
You know, it's fun to me if I have the right people on board.
That's another.
I have to say that because it could be fun. I mean, working with Kristen was wonderful. She was a joy. Brian Rigg, who plays the other anchor person, was also hysterical. I mean, we had a great time.
Yeah, we had a great time. We did
shooting that scene.
Yeah, it was fun.
But a lot of it depends on the people you work with. I mean, they all have to have, everyone has to be on the same page, which is what Hollywood has as an advantage, I think, over independent filmmakers. Because when you have a paycheck and you're getting paid all these big bucks and you have this profession behind you to back you up, you know, you're there to work and you do your job. And if you don't do your job, you get fired. When you're doing an independent film, sometimes depending on how you're paid, people sometimes, you know, decide to quit in the middle of it, or they don't have the enthusiasm that they had when they first came to audition, which is what my biggest problem with actors is. They have this great passion when they want that audition. They want to win that audition. So, you know, they get the part, and then all of a sudden, you're going to shoot, and they just kind of get a little lazier, and that same excitement and everything that was there when you first saw them sometimes dissipates.
Mm-hmm. What do you expect from the acting perspective of a director? Because a lot of times you have some directors who are like Hitchcock, who everything was scripted and was kind of a tyrant, but people, you know, respected his genius. You've got other, you know, directors, sometimes ex-actors, who are very sensitive to the people who are in their cast. What's your expectation of a director who has the vision and you have the acting talent?
I think just having, like you said, just being creative. And, I'm there to do my job, and just I like a director that'll, like, if I have something to share that I want to, like, think that I'll add to it, I would like them to listen to me. And if it doesn't work, then that's completely fine. You know, that's completely fine. And I think a director that believes in you, that trusts you, and that wants to be on set with you makes a difference. If it's just somebody that's just like, oh, let's just get this everywhere, that they don't care about your needs, or, you know, and it's not about treating you like a lot of actors, they expect you to be treated, you know, really, it's just about being respected on the set and having a good time and just working to make a good product or a good movie.
And from the point of view of the director, I mean, again, if you know, obviously Hitchcock just considered everybody as just meat, you know, mm-hmm. in there. What's your philosophy in terms of dealing with actors who have a variety of different personalities and a variety of different temperaments?
Well, it's hard. I think the hardest part about being a director is, you almost have to be a little bit of a psychologist as well, because you have to realize that people are who they are, and they all have their own ways of communicating and things like that. I think, like with Kristen, like she'll tell you that when we first had our first rehearsal, the first thing I did was we sat down and I said, tell me about your worst experience as an actress. And she told me about that. And I asked her, what do you expect from a director? You told me. And then I told her what I expected from the actress. And then we started. And for the most part, that works very well. I mean, I think it's a matter of mutual respect.
Right.
You know, they have their dream and they have their talents and I have mine. And you want to collaborate so it all works out and you come up with the best product you can get. But it's tough.
Okay, this is Interface, and we're speaking with producer, director Robert Alaniz and Kristen Broadwell, who is an actress and the director of online learning and distance learning at Roosevelt University. Let's broaden this a little bit and talk about For Chicago. Is there a community of independent filmmakers? I mean, are you the, especially you in the out in the south suburbs, so I guess you're even more away from the mainstream of theater and film.
I think I'm the only Southside filmmaker out where I'm at. I don't know anyone as far south as Frankfort, Illinois, or Tinley Park that does what I do. There's, you know, when it comes to movie in this day and age, with video and YouTube and stuff, everybody's a filmmaker. I mean, you can put anything you want on YouTube and everything. So there's an array of people out there who are doing that. out by me on the south side. But nobody, I think, taking it as serious as I take it and as wants to do as professional a job, a quality product as I do. And I'm not trying to boast, but I just don't know anybody else. I would love to be a part of some kind of conglomerate or group of filmmakers on the south side, but I just don't know of any out there. They're all up here. They're all in the city, and they're all like the west side of the city and north side. And I haven't made any real connections with any of these people, so I can't say I'm a part of that community. But I pretty much stand alone down on the on the south side. I mean, Kristen, what did you think when you had to go to Frankfurt to audition? I mean, that had to be.
I just thought it was another day of auditioning. You know, it was. I remember it was really rainy that day, and I was and the actor inside of me was thinking, well, maybe it's raining, maybe some of the actors won't show up, and I'll have a better chance.
Now, a lot of your material is semi-autobiographical in a way. Is that, would you characterize
especially Dinks? Yeah, Dinks is, you know, my wife watched The Rough Cut not too long ago, and she's watching it going, oh my God, that's a conversation we had in our bedroom. How could you put that in the movie? And I said, well, it's a serious issue. I mean, Dinks deals with a lot of different issues. And I had to draw from my own personal experience because I am a dink. I don't want children. I never wanted children. My wife is pretty much the same way. We wanted to be individuals and stay who we were. When you become a parent, you become a parent. You now take on another role, and then you become a father. You know, then you become a an instructor, a teacher. I mean, all these roles are thrown on you. A disciplinarian, right? Yeah. All these roles are thrown on you once you have that child.
Isn't it the same thing as dealing with acting? I mean, in a sense, you're the father. I mean, you went through a list of things that you have to do.
Oh, yeah.
And then you say,
you're the father.
You're a director, right?
Right.
You're the director.
No, it's very much the same thing. I don't need children. I just, as a director, I've got my kids. I got my spoiled kids. I've got my
You can get rid of them after the film is over.
What's that?
You can get rid of them after the film is over.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's true.
In terms of the film, so maybe you can talk about how the film is marketed or how the film is going to...
When can we see it?
Yeah.
Well, you can see it in Chicago at the Portage Theater, which is, I think it's the second most well-known theater for independent film showings other than
And it's a classic
the music box.
1920s movie house.
Right. Oh, it's a beautiful,
it's a beautiful, big,
beautiful
large,
place.
Restored.
My last film, The Vision, showed at the music box. And I was thrilled with that because, you know, I came from the days when you could walk into the Oriental Theater, the State Lake Theater, and United Artists and go into those beautiful big theaters. And so I loved the music box. Unfortunately, due to different scheduling issues and things, we couldn't go there. So someone told me, well, go to the Portage Theater. So I went there and I was blown away. It's old. There's no doubt about it. It's has a little musty smell to it, but it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got a gorgeous foyer, and it seats like 1,300 people. My last film, we had 1,200 people attend the premiere of The Vision, so and that was at the Rialto Theater in Joliet. But we wanted to move into the city this time, and that's why we decided to go with the Portage Theater. But that's March 25th. That's the answer to the question.
March 25th, 7 o'clock. What time?
March 25th. And I think that it starts, well, we're going to have like a little Hollywood type premiere thing where there's a couple hours prior to the movie, which starts at 8 o'clock, where you can actually go to the lobby. And I don't know, we're talking about a red carpet and stuff. I don't know.
Fun.
We just do it for fun.
That's right. Yeah. And so how are you promoting this on Facebook and how else?
Well, we started on Facebook, and we started our own website. You can go to dinksthemovie.com, which is our website. And, of course, on Facebook, I guess it's Dinks the Movie Facebook or whatever.
Yes.
Facebook page. I'm not sure how that is.
You can search for Dinks.
Yeah.
I think it comes up with Dinks.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, Dinks. Well, it's Dinks the Movie, I think, mm-hmm. is the what you have to type in. But, that's where we started there. And, every time I've done a film, it's just a matter of time before I just find the right people who are interested. I know that there's a good possibility we will get some coverage, TV coverage again. There's a very good possibility radio coverage and things like that. So we got the promotion aspect of it in pretty good hands right now.
So, Kristen... Now that you've acted a bit in films, which do you prefer, film, theater?
I really enjoy it. My first passion is film, but I am doing some, I would like to get involved in theater too.
What's the difference between being an actress on a film and in theater? I mean, I kind of get it, but I don't know. I've never done it.
Well, with theater, I think there's something special about theater. You have to, you know, there's no second takes. You have to get it right the first time. And there's something energizing about that. I think that is really important. I think theater makes an actor stronger. If they can do it right, you know, every night, if they could cry on cue every single night, I think when they come to work on a film, I think it'd be much easier for them. They're used to being in front of an audience. And, you know, even though you're in front of a camera, you've got tons of people that are sitting there watching you perform, and you're expected to perform on cue. Who wants to be on set waiting for you to hit a mark, you know? So I think theaters, go ahead.
But film, totally different.
Totally.
Yeah,
you can just mess up 10 times and nobody cares.
I think I try to get it right the first time. but I felt like that's why the rehearsals are so important. A lot of film does not do rehearsals.
Right.
And I think rehearsals are very important as far as, you know, getting your character established, getting to know your scene partner a little better, figuring out what works. So when you go to set and you're ready to shoot, you know, you're finished, you know, in a decent amount of time, where instead of doing take after take. So.
And that's what we did. We tried to get the characters first and establish them, because in some cases when we started rehearsals, we didn't even know where we were shooting. So it was kind of like, all right, let's get these characters down so you know what's happening in the movie. Mm-hmm. Of course, we had a script read for everybody to know the whole script from beginning to end. And then once we get the character established, then the hard part was putting them into the environment that they weren't really expecting to be in.
Did the script change a lot do you change the script as you write?
Absolutely. Yeah, the script, you know, it starts as the idea in your head. You put it on paper. The next thing you have is rehearsals. And rehearsals are the beginning of the changes. That's when things start to change. Mm-hmm. Because most of the time you have to adapt the script and the character sometimes to the actor, because sometimes the actor brings to the table something a little bit different than what you had anticipated. So hopefully more than you had anticipated in most cases. And then it continues to change. I just finished the rough cut, the first or almost final rough cut. I hate saying final. But that went through changes. I mean, a lot of scenes got cut. A lot of lines were trimmed. But yeah, it's a constant, mm-hmm. Constant thing.
Yeah, it's interesting, because when we teach humanities, you compare a film and theater, what you say is that theater is an actor's medium and the writers. I mean, people don't usually know who the director is. They may know who the playwright is, and they certainly know who the actors are.
Right.
In film, the argument is the director is the king, mm-hmm. and nobody ever knows who the playwright is for the most part, and the actor is looking out at a screen, and there's nobody talking to someone who's not even there, and that it's being cut bits and pieces. So it's like a big jigsaw puzzle that's in the control of the director. Is that fair, what I'm saying?
Oh, it's dead on. It's dead on. And it's funny, because like most of the actors, I mean, you know, even we sit down with a table read and we go through all the details. When they go to the premiere and they see the movie all together,
they're surprised.
Oh my God, I had no idea that's why you wanted me to scratch my nose.
Yeah.
I had no idea that's why you wanted me to turn to the left. Yeah. Oh my God, you hid that blemish on my face because mm-hmm. you made me turn this way. I was so worried about that.
Yeah.
Because actors are literally in my control, or not control, but they're at my mercy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my editing mercy, my directing mercy. And yeah, the director has a big, huge control over it. And it probably makes a lot of, I think, theater actors uncomfortable in some ways, because they're used to being able to see the play. Mm-hmm. You know, they can always come in, like, on their, their dress rehearsal, and see the whole play from whatever perspective. But in the movie, you don't see it until it's on the screen.
And you don't always act with the other actors.
Right.
So you're reacting to the director, but not to other actors.
Right.
Well, now there's this generation of young Hollywood director types who write a lot of these comedies. I'm thinking of like Seth Rogen, and I can't remember some of these other guys, Ben Stiller. And as I understand it, although I could be wrong, they kind of shoot on a free flow. There's some basic idea, but they do a lot of almost improvisational work.
Mm-hmm.
And then they try to stitch together in the end. And sometimes it works and sometimes it really doesn't badly.
Well, you know, this is my first comedy out of all my films, even though it's my fifth film. And the biggest challenge, the reason I wanted to do it was because in my previous films, something would be improv'd or it'd be funny and someone goes, oh, let's leave that. And I would actually go off on that moment and try to make something funnier out of it. So I have a lot of funny moments in my previous films. So the biggest challenge was, I wonder if I could write a comedy by today's standards that would that people would find funny. I'm not a big fan of some of those movies you just mentioned because to me they're like desperately grabbing laughs and they're intellectually there's nothing humorous because the humor doesn't really it comes from, you know, passing gas or somebody vomiting or something like that, and to me that's not humor. So when I wrote Dinks in the tradition of my favorite comedians, which would be Albert Brooks, who I idolize, and I even make my character's name is Richard Brooks, so I kind of named him after Albert, and Woody Allen and some of those guys. I like the intellectual humor, and that's what we were trying to go for here. So we, even though we have very touchy subjects, you know, abortion and birth control and all these things and sex and everything, anything that has to do with having kids, I wanted it to be amusing and funny, but not cheap humor, something that you laugh about because you go, you know what? That's true. Or, you know what? I can see that.
It's not bathroom humor. It's not that level.
Well, we do have a couple bathroom humor moments. I figured, well, if this today's audience is going to see it, I've got to put a couple in. So.
But your audience is a different audience, which you're not dealing with 14-year-olds or 15-year-olds who laugh at silly things.
Right.
You're dealing with people who are obviously involved with things with kids and families and not kids and neighborhoods who don't like them. So it's a much more sophisticated audience.
And Kristen has one of the best lines. I mean, I've shown the movie, you know, and you have one of the funniest lines at the end of your routine, which I don't think we could repeat here, but it's really, you remember? And we added it. It was an improv.
Now we'll never know.
It was hysterical. And to this day, people, when she says it, it gets the biggest laugh.
So. Oh, this is a great teaser for the audience.
Yeah, it is funny, actually. When he first told me, he's like, now just try this. I thought, what in the world are you talking about? So I did it, and it was hilarious.
Yeah.
It was really funny.
Little play on words.
So we have a minute left, and tell the audience again how they might March 25th is the premiere?
Yeah, the premiere is in Chicago is at the Portage Theater, and it's at 6 o'clock, and the movie is at 8 o'clock. Tickets for that are going to be going on sale, I believe, December 1st, and you'll be able to buy tickets off of the website, which I mentioned was dinksthemovie.com, and you can use PayPal, credit card, or whatever to buy the tickets. And I think that's pretty much what's going on as far as the premiere for now. And then, of course, we'll be looking for other venues to show it afterwards.
Mm-hmm. We hope we don't lose you to the film and theater world.
I love Roosevelt. But I also have a website, kristenbroadwell.com, that has the information as well. And I post events that are, you know, that's coming up with different films that I'm in.
Great. Our guest today has been Kristen Broadwell, actress and director of online learning at Roosevelt University, and filmmaker and producer Robert Alaniz. For Interfaith, this is Arnie Reichler.
And I'm Brad Hunt.
Please join us next time.